This is Sound Effect. Gabriel Spitzer here, and our theme this week is Squeaky Wheel. Now a place where you're supposed to be a squeaky wheel, in the hospital. Experts say it's important to be your own advocate as a patient, and that goes double when you're the parent of a sick child. So what does that feel like from a doctor's point of view? Well, Sam Blackman is a cancer researcher and a former pediatric oncologist in Seattle. He shares this story of two assertive parents and the lessons they taught him.
I was a pediatric resident at a well-respected hospital in the Midwest. And to get in, I had taken a lot of tests. I had a lot of confidence. I mean, I walked in there with two doctoral degrees, right? My medical degree and a PhD in pharmacology. And to be a pediatric resident and to not have children is an interesting thing because you are a textbook expert on children as a population, but you have essentially no expertise in parenting or in that parent's child. During residency, it's typically 1 month long block rotations throughout all of the subspecialties of whatever it is that you're looking to practice. So for pediatrics, it was a month in neonatal intensive care unit and a month on pediatric surgery and a month on, you know, general pediatrics. And there was a mother of a patient on the cardiology service, and we were all terrified of this mother. Mrs. G, oh, Mrs. G. She was a night owl. So she would either be gone during the day working or she'd be asleep. And we'd round and we'd make the plan. But at night, she would be up and she would like read the chart. She'd read the progress notes that we would write about what was going on during the day. And if she saw something that she didn't like, she would have the nurse page the resident on call who'd have to come and talk to her. And if you're on call every third night or every fourth night, like your goal is to keep everything quiet so you can get some sleep. One night, I was asleep, and the nurse paged me because Mrs. G wanted to talk to the resident. You know, I get out of bed, my call room, and I drag myself down the hall onto the ward into her room, and she's up. And honestly, to this day, I can't remember specifically what the concern was. I just remember thinking to myself, now you're just torturing me. Like, there's nothing here that's going to change what I'm going to do right now. There's no acute emergency. And I told her, like, whatever it is that you're concerned about, I'm not seeing. We'll keep an eye on it. And if anything changes, I'm just down the hall sleeping. And I was so tired. I left the room. And at that point, I lost it. And I turned to the nurse who had paged me. And I yelled at her out loud. And I said, don't you dare call me again unless that kid is coding. And Mrs. G was 10 feet away and the doors opened and she heard what I said. I look back over that episode now and I know what my mistakes were. And the biggest mistake that I made was not recognizing that not only was Mrs. G's child's heart diseased and broken, but Mrs. G's heart was broken, that she didn't know what was going to happen to her child. She didn't know if he was going to get better or not. And she was trapped in that hospital room, like her child was trapped in that hospital room. And what she needed was me to be a doctor for her as well. And what I wasn't seeing were the symptoms of her broken heart. And it changed the way that I took care of patients from that day forward. And I recognized that if I was feeling like that, it wasn't that the parent was doing something wrong. It's I was being tested. I think I was substantially better by the time I started my oncology fellowship and really dramatically changed the types of relationships that I had with parents of children with cancer going forward, because I would never, ever feel satisfied until I felt that I had heard everything that I needed to hear, because I knew that sometimes the words as they were being spoken weren't the message, it was what was underneath, and sometimes it just took time to find that. I was doing a rotation through the oncology service, and there was a little girl who had, without a doubt, one of the worst brain tumors ever that you can have. Almost uniformly fatal. 95-98% of children die from that disease. This little girl, who I'll call Brianna, her mother was a single mom, and she just wanted no part of the care team. She would not even let us into the room because she just didn't see the point, because she knew that the diagnosis was devastating and that the outcome was going to be fatal. We'd stand outside of the door and we'd talk about the child in the abstract. But there were times when Brianna's mother would come out of the room when she wanted to try her own things. She was very much into alternative modes of therapy. She came to us one day because she wanted to give Brianna daily coffee enemas. Turns out that there's this alternative therapy called Gerson therapy. It's not ever been shown to be effective in any way, shape, or form, and it's really sort of a fringe thing in the medical literature, but it involved daily coffee enemas. And so I went back and I talked to Brianna's mother and I laid out what I had found. And by taking her seriously and actually engaging her as an adult and listening to her, she actually began to let me into the room. And then I would come out and I'd tell the team what I found. And for a while, I was exclusively the only person she would let, besides the nurses, the only person she'd let into the room. And I was basically her personal doctor. But, you know, rotations don't go on forever. And at the end of the month, I moved on to the next thing. You know, I think about that time, about how you walk out of the situation where you're a master at taking tests. You're great at filling in the bubbles. You've got a sheaf of number two pencils at the ready at all times. And then you're in a situation, being a doctor, taking care of patients, where you're tested and sometimes you don't even know what the questions are, let alone the answers, or you don't even recognize that you're being tested. I never got a chance to apologize to Mrs. G. Mrs. G was a great teacher. She taught me a lesson that I needed to learn. Brianna's mother was a great teacher for me because she taught me what happens if you actually pass that test. I was out to dinner one night with my wife, and I was coming home, and my pager went off, and it was from a part of the hospital where the palliative care patients go, patients at the end of their lives. And the nurse said, I know you're not on call, and I know you're not even on service, but it looks like Brianna is going to die tonight. Would you like to come in? And so I dropped my wife off at home and I went back to the hospital. Dying is a process from a disease like a brain tumor, and it is not an easy process. You don't just stand there as a physician, you actually try to work to alleviate symptoms and pain. But it takes a long time because while the tumor in the brain is shutting down higher order functions in the brain, the heart and the lungs of an 8-year-old are like, well, wait a second, I'm like only 8 years old, and they are strong and they keep going. And it's heartbreaking to say, and it's heartbreaking to think about, and it's heartbreaking to watch. We just had to do what doctors for a long time have done, which is to just be present, to bear witness. And at some point in the middle of the night, 2 o'clock in the morning, Brianna had stopped breathing. And so I went into the room, and Brianna's mother's in there, and then Brianna is lying in her bed, and I did what you're supposed to do. You feel for a pulse. You put your stethoscope on the chest and you listen for a full 60 seconds to ensure the absence of a heartbeat and respiration. And you make note of the time of death. And as I was leaving the room, I said to Brianna's mother, I said, I'm so sorry for your loss. Is there anything that I can do for you? And she said, can you pray with me? And so I'm like a secular Jew from New Jersey, and I was not the praying type. I didn't really believe in God at that point, and I also felt that it was weird, and I was really questioning, like, should I be pretending to pray over a newly dead child? Like, in my head, I'm thinking about me. But then I realized that Brianna's mother needed me to do this, and she needed me to be the doctor that she had seen me as for the past number of months. And so I went back, and she and I held hands, and we stood at Brianna's bedside, and she closed her eyes, and so I closed my eyes, and then she started speaking, and she happened to say the one non-Jewish prayer that I actually knew. And she said, "Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven."